You've seen what they've been up to lately with Musk and Trump. And, if you look at it in detail, it's really impressive, right? Without going into all the details, what they've been arguing about and how they've fought and what's happening there. But it shows first of all what kind of people are those who exercise power, who actually have power over our society, right? Be it those who hold the highest political offices or those who hold the highest economic offices like, Musk, who actually exercise power over society, and you can see what kind of brainchild they are, right? What kind of gear is being used to lead the way, right? Now Musk is offended because I'll make you president, but in return, my best buddy, the head of NASA, will become the head of NASA, and then I can earn billions and billions with my SpaceX, through my collaboration with my buddy at NASA, and because he won't become president, the head of NASA, that's why I'm destroying you now and so on and so forth, right? So, you can see that this is what we are, and this is something that has been the case for thousands of years. We are being controlled. The exercise of power comes from people who, some say, are psychopaths, others say, are simply poor, deluded people who are desperate for fame and fortune, and who are deluded, misguided, but who are just at the forefront of our society. But it has been very rare since the beginning that this was interrupted or that there were exceptions. But as a rule, the topic is more or less well concealed, and today it is less and less well regarded compared to the past. Although in the past it was also known that the king was only interested in his pomp and wealth. It was not assumed at all that he wanted the good of the people. Today, there is a bit more pretense, that it is all about the masses. But in fact, you can see that for these people, their own power, their own wealth, Rome, whatever their priorities are the most important thing. They won't change that, not you, not me. We have to deal with it, and it is important not to get too worked up about it, but still to take a look every now and then to see what is going on there. What are these power games like? Positions of power. And there was just a nice question in the Bundestag, and I would like to show you about it. Why do I want to show you this? It was about the war in Ukraine. It was about the question of NATO's eastward expansion, and also at the time when reunification was imminent, when Russia withdrew, the wall fell, and negotiations were taking place in Russia about reunification. Whether Germany and the Western states had given a commitment at that time that NATO would not expand eastward or whether they had not. And that is therefore absolutely fundamental, since that is a very important background to the current war. So, it is less about Ukraine as such now. It is about Russia's security interests, it is about the security interests of the West, the power interests of the West, the power interests of Russia. And unfortunately, Ukraine is in between. That is the problem. And that is why this question is so crucially important. And if we were to enter a third world war at some point, then this question of these security interests and these power struggles between the West and the East would be a major cause of it. That's why we should always remember what was really at stake. What was the case back then? And now the question keeps coming up. You told the Russians back then that we would not expand NATO to the East. You broke this criminal promise, and that's why we are. That was the first major sin, and because of what followed from that, the permanent pressure on Russia, that's why we are now in this war situation, that's why we now have this dangerous constellation. That's what some people say, and others say that this promise never existed. There was never any commitment to the Russians. And since Mr. Wedepol expressed this quite literally in the Bundestag a few days ago, I would like to show you briefly. The question was about the following question in the Bundestag question and answer and Mr. Wedepol's answer. Thank you very much. The next question goes to the Member of Parliament Mr. Evis. Esteemed Minister, I believe that you and I belong to a generation that experienced reunification. And back then, you could hear time and again in the news that the Helmut Kohl government had promised the Russian government that NATO's eastward expansion would not take place. And that's why my question to you is, how did it come about that this promise was actually broken, and when will this eastward expansion of NATO finally stop? Thank you very much, Minister. Yes, when will the false claims from the right and the left in this house actually stop? I have to say that. Well, let's stick to the truth. There was no such promise. Let's stick to the truth again. There was never a similar promise that there would be no eastward expansion. Okay, Mr. Wedipol, now let's take a look at a recording of Tagesthemen from 2014. I think it'll take 3 or 4 minutes. Please watch it in its entirety. Especially the last part, which you don't see very often. Watch it in its entirety because it's a very, very exciting contemporary document. Tagesthemen, an unsuspected medium in 2014. The collapse of the Soviet Union was the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century, Putin said, or Lilisk just quoted it. For Putin, it was probably worse than World War II. You should keep this sentence in mind in order to understand what drives the Russian leadership elites. And the West is certainly not innocent of the growing feeling in Russia that it was being harassed from outside. This graphic clearly shows how the Soviet Union crumbled in 1991. And it was far from clear whether all the former Soviet republics would continue to be Russia's allies. And then NATO came along and admitted the former European members of the Warsaw Pact, one after the other, from the Baltics to Bulgaria. The great fear in Russia is that the remaining white spots, which also include Ukraine, will now also turn blue. When the Russian troops left East Germany, the old power had long since been in decline. A period began that Russia still perceives as humiliating to this day. In return for German unification, the West promised not to allow NATO to advance further east. In Washington, the then foreign minister made far-reaching commitments.
We agreed that there was no intention of expanding the NATO defense zone eastward. Incidentally, this did not only apply to the GDR, which we did not want to incorporate, but it applied in general. A promise with a short lifespan. The first Eastern European countries were admitted to NATO. Secretary of State Albright beamed as she hugged her colleagues from Poland, the Czech Republic, and Hungary. A threatening move from Moscow's perspective, but they were too weak to react. The next round of enlargement. George W. Bush, for whom Russia is part of the Axis of Evil, invites 7 countries from the former Eastern Bloc to Washington to welcome them into NATO. The feeling of being surrounded is growing. NATO is on our doorstep and is already targeting new countries. At the NATO summit in Bucharest, Bush vehemently demands the admission of Georgia and Ukraine. He had previously traveled to Kiev, where Prime Minister Yulia Tymoshenko implored him. Without NATO accession, there would be a catastrophe. My country's direction is clear. NATO must expel Georgia and Ukraine. But in the spring of 2008, Bush's days are already numbered. His influence is waning. The doors to NATO remain closed, but Russia is alarmed. Putin believes that the West has betrayed Moscow. At the very moment when Russia had cooperated and was weak, he perceives this as a deep humiliation. Since he came to power, he has wanted to reverse that.
Then the about-face. The new man in the White House is focusing on diplomacy and wants to talk instead of threaten. For Obama, the East-West conflict is yesterday's danger. His Secretary of State is demonstratively pressing the reset button for a new start in U.S.-Russian relations. Today, Hillary Clinton is comparing Putin to Hitler, an attempt not to appear naive, as many accuse Obama of that. When he and Romney described Russia as a major threat in a televised debate, Obama coolly dismissed him. The Cold War has been over for decades, if you will. Mr. Governor, you are pursuing a foreign policy from the 80s. As a sign of goodwill, Obama is stopping a controversial project of his predecessor, a state-of-the-art missile defense system in Poland and the Czech Republic, around 200 kilometers from the Russian border. A red rag to Moscow. But there will be no rapprochement. Putin sees Obama's concessions as weakness. There is silence. Moscow is blocking all attempts at a solution, not only on the Syria issue. Putin has noticed that Obama is not sticking to the red line he has set himself. Exactly.
Putin considers many heads of state to be weaklings, but Obama is, as we Americans say, not a loud one for him.
Yes, I think that's a very interesting article. By the way, Weltspiegel doesn't show Tagesthemen. Please forgive me. Weltspiegel 2014, very, very interesting, I think. And it shows the tensions, the escalation of power on both sides, during Russia's weak phase in the 80s, 90s, early 90s, NATO's advance against its promises not to expand eastwards. Why? Because it can, and on the other hand, the perceived constriction of Russia and that is opposed to it, and at the moment when the West and Obama tried to adopt a new policy, also saying out of the weakness of the West, I'm not interested, I'm going my own way. So on both sides we have power-hungry people who are obsessed with power or blinded by it, you choose. Of course, everyone has their reasons. We have to do it this way, we don't want to go into the details. But it's about power on both sides and the population in between is completely irrelevant and the statement we're making here, that it's the evil Russians alone or the other way around, the Russians are completely peaceful and only the Americans want power. No, Russia definitely has power interests too. Both sides have power interests. Almost every state, if it has the opportunity, uses its opportunities. Most states are just so weak that they don't have many opportunities to act externally. Because there are a few super people who decide what happens. But in almost every government in every state, there are people at the top who exploit power to the extent that they have the opportunity. We've been living in this world for ages. That's not going to change. We just have to be aware of that and not let ourselves be taken in by propaganda. But the question that arises for me is why does Mr. Wadepool say it that way? One could certainly also say, yes, we promised them that in 2019-98, when the wall fell and we negotiated with the Russians, but in the meantime, we had promised them that. There was no signed contract to that effect. But we made the promise, but in the meantime, times had changed. In the years that followed, new decisions were made and we decided to assess NATO differently and to push forward accordingly. But why this statement, which we would like to repeat here? Yes, let's stick to the truth. There was no such promise. We agreed that there was no intention to expand the national defense area to the east. Incidentally, this does not only apply to the GDR, which we do not want to incorporate, but it applies in general. Yes, let's stick to the truth. There was no such promise. Well, where is the truth then? There was no such commitment, says someone who was not there at the time and is now in the highest office, while someone who was not only there, but who led these negotiations, says, yes, we promised that, in the presence of James Baker, the American declutterer, who also supports it. That means that those who were there at the time and did it say, yes, we promised that. And then someone stands up today and says in a position of responsibility in the Bundestag and says that it never happened. And that's a question that makes me wonder why. It wouldn't be necessary. You could say that we have developed a perspective on it, but why? And that's what makes the citizens so up in arms, why they feel like such big shots. When such statements are made publicly in front of the cameras, where anyone can check and say, no, that's not true. And then you have to ask the question, why is that? Why can't you just stick to what is? It is understandable that one changes topics, that one changes perspectives, that one has conditions, needs, to see things differently, or simply has reasons why one does this. But then to say, to dismiss those who question it, to say that they are lying, that they are telling falsehoods, and even to bring up things that do not correspond to reality. Difficult. In this sense, ladies and gentlemen, it has never been any different. Don't get too worked up about it. I still take the reference to it and occasionally address such topics without getting too worked up about it or getting too worked up about it. It is part of assessing things realistically, observing them, naming them, and also through things like this. What we are doing here is nothing other than shouting, the emperor is naked, the emperor has no clothes on, they can say what they want, they have no clothes on, but that is not why we are upset that he is naked, it is just the way it is. And again, for thousands of years we have been dominated by those who put power, fame and wealth first and not the well-being of the masses. And that has never really changed, with a few exceptions. And so don't get upset about it, take note, but feel free to say that the emperor is naked, even if I can't change it. On that note, have a nice afternoon.